reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 22nd episode of In the Gravel Trap. I'm your host, Adam Tate, along with my usual co-host, Joey Barnes of Tribute Racing, Christopher DeHardy of Motorsport.com, Josh Farmer of Motorsport Monday, and our very often but still always special guest, Mr. Frank Santoroski of Drafting the Circuits. We've got a lot of racing news to talk to you all about this evening. A look back to some debuts a couple weeks ago, and a look ahead to a lot of racing this weekend. First and foremost being the IndyCar Series, and all of the Monster Road to Indy Ladder Series making their debut at NOLA Motorsports Park. The opening race was frantic, lots and lots of debris with the new aero kits, and some interesting things going on in the Chevrolet camp. So that's what we'll talk about first. How's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, fantastic. Adam?
Doing well, Adam.
Awesome. Well, Frank, I know you had some specific news regarding the penalty Chevrolet was awarded that you wanted to talk about, so I'll let you kick us off here tonight.
Well, you know, I think that the whole Chevrolet thing is interesting, how it's been spun in the media. And, you know, when the casual fan reads an article and they hear the word penalties slapped on Chevrolet, your mind immediately goes to, gosh, they're cheating. But, you know, the reality is they're not. They are simply taking a look at the engines, and they identified a valve spring problem that needed to be changed. So they decided to go ahead and forego those points, repair those engines. And again, IndyCar rules, you have several components of the engine are sealed. They need to be sealed for 2,500 miles. But Chevrolet decided that they would go ahead and forego the manufacturer points, repair the engines to prevent, you know, engine failures in future races. For them, that was a bigger thing on their radar than keeping the points they had gained at St. Pete. So, you know, it's a stark contrast to the things we've heard about levied in NASCAR, you know, regarding punching micro holes in tires and stuff like that. So, you know, just to clear the air, you know, Chevrolet is far from cheating. They are just accepting a penalty that they know is there for future wins. Because I believe Chevrolet is not as much concerned with the Manufacturers' Cup as they are concerned with winning races and winning the Drivers' Championship. So just wanted to clear the air on there. And again, you know, I've got a good friend named Gray Warren who works for Richard Childress Racing. And we were discussing this, and the first words out of his mouth is, he goes, "Sounds like a valve spring problem." And then a day later, yeah, that's what comes out of valve spring problem, because he's a long time mechanic engine guy, and he nailed that. So, you know, when they realize there's going to be a problem coming in the future, the best thing to do is go ahead and fix it, accept the penalty. You know, but again, it's not what you would call cheating. So that's my take on that, and I think there have been some misinformation out there from some other media sources.
Definitely, and here's my question to everyone on that. The block and everything has stayed the same the past several years. The teams are telling everyone that IndyCar let them kind of turn up the wicks, turn up the boost, and get more out of it. Chevrolet has by far and away been the better engine to have over Honda the past several years. Do you guys think this is a case of them maybe pushing just a little bit too hard? And is that part of what has given them a big advantage starting the season? Do you think Honda can crawl that back? Or do you think this is simply just a maintenance thing where they goofed and, you know, pulled in a quick fix?
Well, I think that I don't think it's a goof and a quick fix. It might have been a let's try this and oops, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
you know, Chevrolet has definitely had the horsepower advantage, and their engines have held up. Very few engine failures in IndyCar over the last 3-4 seasons. So, but I kind of see what you're saying. They might have tried to do something different and realized quickly that the engines aren't going to hold up.
Exactly, because that's one thing the casual fan's not really going to notice is they're always pushing on the engine, and you don't see it. It's covered up. But the thing you do see are the aero kits. They're great. They've added a lot of excitement, but they had a lot of issues with pieces falling off and breaking at St. Pete, and even when they flew into the stands. And Josh, I know you have some more info on those.
Yeah, I emailed and I received an email from a representative from Honda and Chevrolet. Didn't actually talk to anybody specifically, but for Nella, HPD has reinforced the lower portion of the end plates on the front wing and the interior portion of the rear wheel guard. And also another thing that I thought was interesting that it looks like, I don't know if Chevy had this, but I know the Hondas have this, is that the bottom front wing plate that's actually the stock DW12 plate from Dallara, that wing actually flexed quite a bit because of the increased amount of downforce generated by the aero kit. So Dallara has actually, for NOLA, they've matted like a temporary fix. I'm not sure if that's just a cover or what, but then they are going to submit another proposal to IndyCar to make the wing out of a stronger material. I think with this whole situation, obviously, you never want to see fans hurt because of flying debris. I mean, fans do not expect to take that risk when they go to a race. But you know, I mean, I think you know, anytime you have a new car or a new package, you're gonna have teething issues. I mean, I think you know, the spare parts failure is kind of been generated a little bit on IndyCar's part of there only being a month from homologation for them to build parts or at least road course parts for 24 cars. I mean, obviously for the Indy 500, they'll have a little bit more time to get the oval pieces together. But I mean, you know, I mean, teething issues. I mean, when Pando's unveiled the BP1, the first race at the Vegas Street Circuit, the fuel cell. Remember that there were very very leaky fuel cells, and I think even Willpower ended up winning the race, had to pit an extra time, and so did Paul Tracy. So I mean, I think it's just teething issues. But I mean, it looks like in IndyCar, you know, I mean, yeah, they're being reactive instead of proactive, but on the other hand, you know, the aero kits, I mean, it looks better than the DW12. And Sebastian Bourdais actually also made a good point too. I can't remember who he reported to. I think it was the Indy Star, but Bourdais kind of said, you know, the aero parts aren't going to break off the aero kits if people don't run into each other. I mean, the wings are as sophisticated. I don't want to say as sophisticated as Formula One cars, but they look kind of like F1 wings, and it's like, or at least F1 wings from 10 to 15 years ago. But you know, I mean, it's just, you know, the drivers just have to. I mean, we saw a lot of drivers taking a lot more risk, which part of what Steve Erickson also said is that the increased amount of downforce of drivers are taking a lot more risky moves because you can hold the throttle a lot longer going through the corners. So I mean, we'll see how it pans out at NOLA. I mean, I'm thinking NOLA probably won't have as much contact just because it's a natural terrain road course and there's a lot more room. But I'm thinking Long Beach, we might see a lot more contact. So, Adam, I see that you want to chime in on this, so go ahead.
Yeah, just talking about the downforce, they're going to NOLA next, so I'll hand it over to Chris in a minute because he is our resident NOLA expert. But it's an old-school track, a lot of downforce the cars have there. And an interesting thing I saw this week is Sebastian Bourdais, who we all know ran Champ Car, Kart, Formula One, the older IndyCars, this generation of IndyCar, He thinks that they've surpassed Formula One in terms of amount of total downforce. He said, I think we do, actually. With the wings we carry on the cars, there's probably more downforce on an Indy car than there is in Formula One. So that's a drastic change. And I think it's really going to be interesting seeing the guys adapt, especially with the lack of power steering. And as Frank's saying, the DW12 was so durable and so stable before this that it's made the car more reactive. It's made the car where you can push it harder. So it's going to be kind of interesting. But along those lines, they are going to NOLA this weekend. Mr. Christopher DeHarty is going to be there. Why don't you give us a little bit of a preview of what to expect, Chris?
Well, there's one thing that is truly unexpected about racing is that there are so many things can change, especially the weather. Matt Weaver isn't here yet, and they're already predicting rain for the whole weekend. Not looking forward to that, of course, but we'll see what happens. The only one thing I did want to say earlier is that Indy Lights, unfortunately, won't be at NOLA Motorsports Park, but they will be at Long Beach the following week. It's going to be a fantastic weekend for the series. Going to a brand new market, a venue that's never had a race this huge before. I'm looking forward to seeing how this market reacts to having an IndyCar race here. The New Orleans Advocate has been doing a lot of promotion for the event, as they are one of the sponsors. I've had some articles appear in their paper. It's been overall, I'd say, well promoted on the print media front. Then again, we'll see what happens for the grandstand come race weekend. It's going to be interesting, that's for sure. Another thing I do want to at least bring up while we have this segment right here is that it was confirmed earlier this week, Sage Karam and Simone DiSilvestro will both be at the Indy Grand Prix of Louisiana. So all the drivers that we saw at St. Petersburg will be making their way over to New Orleans, or rather to Avondale, for the NOLA round for the championship. It's good to see, you know, this kind of continuity, especially considering that Karam and Simona didn't really have full-time positions in the series. But nowadays, with them having this fully confirmed for the next race, maybe we can see them get even better results.
Yeah, neither one of them had a race I'd like to remember. Go ahead, Frank.
I'm sorry. I think it's fantastic that the car count's going to stay at 24. But, you know, the it's up in the air if we're going to have a wet race, and it really looks like we're going to have a wet race. And hopefully we won't have a washout because for all the work those folks have done there in NOLA to try to put on a state-of-the-art event, it would be sad if we had a washout. But that being said, if we have a wet race or a race with shady conditions, I really feel like this venue specifically could lead to perhaps a first-time winner in the series or somebody we haven't seen win for a while. Or we could see a guy who's, shown he can win on anything, Scott Dixon, come to the forefront. Again, we can say, yeah, Penske's going to stomp the field, but I really feel optimistic about this event that we're going to see something really cool come out of the outcome. And maybe that's just me, maybe that's just me being melodramatic, but everything I've read and everything I've seen, and I know, Chris, you've been down there, you've seen the track, talked to some of the folks down there. You've written some great articles for the local newspaper there in New Orleans. So,
what's your
yeah, you have superior junk. what's your feel on what are we going to see come race day, whether it's wet or dry?
The teams have done quite a bit of testing down here. With the track being down, in the extreme southern half of the country, it's actually made it a new testing destination for winter testing. It used to be just Sebring and maybe the Homestead Road Course and Barber, but with how bloody cold it was this winter, NOLA was even more popular since it is a few hours south of Birmingham. I'm really pleased with, you know, how much data they've been able to gather. And I think, honestly, they're going to have great setups and the times are going to be dropping rapidly over the weekend. Now, if there is rain, of course, there is a drainage issue worry because the track is only about 4 feet above sea level. And honestly, I'm not sure if that was really in the thought process of a lot of the people coming into this weekend, because, you know, we were thinking, you know, best case scenario, everything's dry and everything will be great and everything like that. And then the last few days we see it's raining and we're like, ooh, might need to take a look at this. But I'm predicting, honestly, it won't be as dominating of a race for Penske as we thought, because a lot of other teams have data that they can jump on. Like Ganassi tested there in January. Then I think Ganassi had another test there right before St. Petersburg. They have quite a bit of data they can look over between their drivers, and they will be very quick.
You know, I like this train of thought you guys are on, so I kind of want to go around and see what everybody thinks. You know, Frank is saying it could be a guy we haven't seen win for a while. It could be a first-time winner, because despite the amount of testing they've done, it is a new circuit for everybody. Everybody is kind of starting at a more level playing field than usual. So I want to hear everybody's thoughts on who could win. Who's their surprise pick if there's a surprise winner? And for me, maybe because I was just reading a quote from him, but Sebastian Bourdais comes to mind. You know, KVSH is always one of those teams that is right there nipping at the heels of the big three. So I think if it rains, Seabass will have a good run, live up to his heritage, and put one in. What do you think, Josh?
Honestly, I think you guys are going to think I'm nuts for saying this, but I'm thinking maybe Graham Rahal, actually. I mean, Graham, you know, he was running very well at St. Petersburg until he got penalized for dumping Charlie Kimball. But, you know, I mean, he won his first race in the rain, and he's been quick in – He's been the fastest Honda in testing. So I mean I think with the rain we'll probably see a lot more equalized field. And I mean, who knows? I mean if the race gets shortened, you know, Dale Coyne's very sly about winning timed races. I mean, so I think, you know, I mean, to even go even way more out in left field, We could see Carlos Huertas. I mean, I don't see Francisco Dracone winning, but in this business, I nothing surprises me anymore.
Well, I guess I should finally talk.
I forgot about you there.
Yeah, everybody forgets about me. It's okay. The captain of cool is back. It's okay. I'll bring control back to the show. You know, I really honestly think that, like something that Frank touched on last week, that this circuit favors maybe the Honda package. If it rains, all bets are off as far as aero goes for the most part. I really like Jack Foxworth. I like, even though they're off sequence last week or 2 weeks ago, I really like what I saw to him, the speed, the pace. And he comes from a European background. The weather over there always sucks. So I look for him to even be stronger if the weather ends up being, you know, a torrential, ridiculous downfall. Outside of that, I look for more of the same cast, because guys like Will Power are just so strong. Guys like Juan Pablo Montoya are so strong. You know, maybe a Hinchcliffe sneaks in there because he had a horrible run at St. Pete. But ultimately, if we're talking about first-time winners or people we haven't seen win in a while, forget Graham Rahal. That pick's horrible. Jack, you know, that kid.
I only said it rained.
You know, that kid will get to the front and he'll find a way to lose the race. And, you know, he's the guy that will come out of a corner and hit the wall and blame the wall for being in there. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to say somebody like Hawksworth, we're going to start seeing this birth of the superstar, because the pace is there, The attitude is there, and honestly, he could be a guy that I think could take that next step, and maybe this is the year that we see it, much like we saw Hinch do a few years back. This could be Hawk's year.
You know, one name we haven't thrown out there is Joseph Newgarden. I think that the merger of the teams, you know, combining the resources between the Fisher team and the Hartman team, and the Carpenter team, rather, you know, this is actually a track that favors Newgarden's style. If he happens to get a good qualifying run and get up there, it's not out of the question that this guy pulls off his first win here. The other guy I'm thinking is his teammate, Luca Filippi. This guy, if he can keep the car on the track and not bump into somebody, this is also a track that favors his style. And if we have a little rain, favors his experience. So, but, you know, somebody mentioned Sebastian Bourdais a little earlier on. I think that's a damn good pick, too. But it's hard to pick against the Penske's and Ganassi's rather, you know, you know, something in the little voice in the back of my head says Simon Pagenaud. And the other little voice in the back of my head says Scott Dixon. And the other voice in the back of my head says, man, Frank, you got a lot of voices in the back of your head. You should get that checked out.
Just maybe. You know whose little voice in the back of his head scares me the most, though? And he hasn't given us a pick, would be Mr. Christopher DeHardy.
Francesco Dracone.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
I'm kidding. Okay, so I just wanted to get your reaction because I love just deadpanning completely outrageous picks. Let's go with someone who won in 2013, didn't win last year, and made a change for this year. Did anybody remember that guy named James Hinchcliffe?
Yeah.
Rings a bell.
Yeah, Hinch is a good pick.
Just for guys that you know, haven't won in a while, guys that I want to see do well. And I don't know if you all have noticed, I think every single driver we've picked except for Joseph Newgarden has been a Honda driver. You all notice that? By Filippi, too.
Oh, wow. Frank did mention Pagenaud, but that was more of one of the voices in his head.
Yeah, well, a voice in my head. I'm a weird guy.
Everybody's waiting for Pagenaud to win for Penske.
Well, I got a bunch of voices in my head, but they all speak Spanish, so I have no idea what they're saying.
Figured they'd be French since you're like a New Orleans swamp rat.
True story.
Let my historical nerd jump in on here. The New Orleans traded hands between the French and the Spanish a couple times. Everything in the French Quarter is built by the Spanish for the most part. But before we get too off topic, Mazda Road to Indy is going to be there as well. Chris, you want to give us a brief rundown on what to expect when they go to NOLA?
Well, we'll start with USF 2000. Jake Edson and Victor Franzoni are going to be fighting pretty hard in USF 2000. They fought pretty hard at NOLA when they had Winterfest up here. Aaron Tielitz was, you know, in the top three or four, and so was Nico Jamin. In fact, I think Jamin finished second in the first two races for USF 2000 there at NOLA. Moving up to Pro Mazda, one driver that I really want to look out for, I know I've talked about him before, but Weiron Tan is for Andretti Autosport. He needs a good weekend extremely badly. In St. Petersburg, he had a first-lap accident in the second race. In the first race, he was out with about four or five laps to go with contact in turn four, I think it was, or turn five. I think he learned at St. Petersburg that it's not as easy as they thought it was going to be. I guess I put too much stock in Winterfest, because him and Jack Aiken really goaded each other on, and everybody else was, you know, miles behind them. But, you know, once you get into the real race, you know, that's when the gloves come off, and that's when you find out, you know, who you really have to fight against. That being said, Neil Albarico is going to be a very hard charger this weekend, and I'm expecting good things from him.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Albarico wins one or sweeps again like he did in St. Pete.
You know, just briefly I want to touch on, a guy that's going to get a chance to go back there, you know, Florian Latour. He's going to.
Yes.
I mean, this is a second trip to this track, and that's another thing, is that this is the first chance for a lot of these drivers. You know, Winterfest, NOLA was the first race as part of Winterfest, so for all the drivers, this is their chance to really take whatever they learned, the teams to take what they learned from that first Winterfest trip, and we're really going to see the cream rise to the top and see which drivers are going to end up prevailing. And, I mean, you got what you got, you learned what you learned, and now, I mean, even the rookies have a second chance, which they don't get until next year at most tracks, but they got it in this case. So I'm really excited to see someone like Latour prove his worth, because, I mean, Chris, you and I have talked about him off the air several times, and, I mean, that kid's got just worlds of potential.
I got to say, Latour needs to turn the heat up big time coming into New Orleans. You know, he had the Winterfest up here. He did okay at Winterfest last year, I believe, but I guess he just needs that one little spark to kind of jolt him into getting up at the top two or three there. I mean, he did get a podium, I think, at the first race for Mazda. I think it was the first race. But when he switched to from Bilardi to Cape Motorsports last year, I think everything just clicked, and he just went on a roll, on a roll, on a roll. And seeing Albarico winning both races last weekend, I think that's going to give him a huge wake-up call and realize, hey, I need to get my act together because we have some winning we need to get going on. Latour will be, I would say, in the upper parts of the field. Will he win? Honestly, I'd say he's good for at least one podium, maybe two, but we'll find out.
Yeah, and along the lines of things needing to get started, the only season which is more infuriating to me than the IndyCar season and the one major series still left yet to begin is the World Endurance Championship. And I'm forgetting Josh, who has an Indy 500 announcement. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, well, I was not really an announcement per se, but it's just, I mean, just the 99th running of the Indy 500 is a little bit less than a month and a half away, and I was gonna go do a rundown at a grid update right now. So right now, I mean, Andretti Autosport is entering the most cars with five. They've got Simona, De Silvestro, and Justin Wilson driving for them alongside their three full time pilots. And you know, and Kurt Busch's has been ruled out of the Indy 500 for Andretti Autosport. They're not going to run six cars. And J.R. Hildebrand was confirmed as the third driver at Carpenter Fisher Hartman Racing, which completes an all American lineup powered by an American manufactured Chevy. That's a little random fun fact there. And Dale Coyne Racing actually confirmed to me that Francisco Drouin probably will not be in the 19 car for the 500, and they will make a driver announcement for the 500 in the coming weeks, hopefully. But Pippa Mann is likely to partner up with Dale Coyne for the third straight year. So and Brian Herta Autosport has also already had their rides confirmed with 2006 Indy Lights champion Jay Howard returning to IndyCar after nearly 4-year hiatus alongside rookie Gabby Chavez. And the best guesses I would say Sage Karam's probably likely going to be in the fourth Ganassi car. I mean right now, I mean, they've been kind of on a week to week deal, but I think that deal's pretty much done unless Karam does something really bad, like take Scott Dixon out of the win at NOLA. But I don't see that happening. Buddy Lazier's also likely to be back with his family owned team with Chevy Power, although no announcement has been made yet. And Townsend Bell will be returning, but he will not be with KV Racing, which he actually almost won the race last year. You know, and he was very impressive last year, but he will be back with Dreyer and Reinbold Racing, who will be making a one-off deal, and And KV Racing will also enter four cars again this year, and the third car is going to be in conjunction with Jonathan Bird's Racing, which they will run USAC standout Brian Clausen. So that'll make Robin Miller happy that we see a sprint car driver in the Indy 500. And the fourth car is likely to be filled by Alex Tagliani, who's been off in NASCAR land last year after getting let go by RSR Racing and in the LMPC category in Tudor. So and Schmidt Pearson Motorsports is also likely to field a third car. But it will not be Jacques Villeneuve, even though Villeneuve still has some interest to return to IndyCar, it's understood, but he likely will not be back for the Indy 500. And then lastly, we have drivers without rides, which Sebastian Saavedra and Gary Peterson with the automatic fire sprinklers, they're still together and looking for a ride. And then you have a few other guys like Ryan Briscoe, who's primarily focused on running Le Mans for the Corvette Racing, but Briscoe, I mean, any team can pick Briscoe and he'll get the car in the field solidly and he'll run solid. And then I'm not sure about James Davison. I'll probably know more at Long Beach when I'm there, because he's running in the PWC. Probably just run it by Davison and see what he's looking, and that's about it right now. But it's like, I mean, if the field keeps growing like this, I mean, we could potentially see some bumping, which the Indy 500 desperately needs. So, guys.
Yeah, I think the one name you failed to mention was Ryan Finney with a Casamigos car. He's got some backing from that little tequila company coming out of Los Angeles with George Clooney's money. He's still looking for a ride. He's been talking to KV. He's been talking to some other folks, but you may see him in a ride in the 500. That could be the guy that could help fill the back row. but again, you got other guys out there like Connor Daly thumping for a ride, Oriel Servia thumping for a ride. You never know what could happen at Indy. But man, it would be great to see some bumping on a bump day. We haven't had that in a number of years, so it looks like the field is filling out very nicely for the Indy 500, the 99th, and then of course, next year the 100th. It's fantastic. I can't imagine the event the Speedway is going to put on, because I had a great time in 2011 at the 100th anniversary. Rather than the 100th running. But the Speedway always puts on a great show, a great time. If you've never been there, that's something that's got to be a bucket list thing for you to get to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the 500. Forget about that crazy NASCAR race they have out there or the motorcycle thing. Get there for the 500. just once in your life, I've been to 20 of them now. So, I'm really looking forward to the 500 this year.
Yeah, I think just briefly, whenever they do the 100th Indy 500, I just want them to have Laguna Seca back on the calendar, and but coupled with Long Beach, and I'm going to be in nostalgia heaven with just everything that could be that season. That right there would be a cornerstone of my crown jewel races, my triple crown, if you will.
Oh, you sound like so many of my disappointed kart fans that just missed Laguna Seca, and we missed Cleveland and Portland and all those great venues we used to have, and I really hope that IndyCar reaches out to that fan base, and I hope that fan base would fill those grandstands at those tracks if we ever go back there, because those are some great venues that have just faded off the calendar that guys like you and I and a lot more would like to see back on.
Well, I mean, Cleveland was just 10 times more fun than, even though it was an airport venue and a temporary circuit, it was a lot more fun to watch than Mid-Ohio. I mean, just in my opinion, it was fantastic. I mean, that was some of the best racing I've ever seen. And, you know, Michigan over Belle Isle and tracks like that. I mean, yeah, I think that if you're looking to move ahead as IndyCar to the future and you're looking to really build your brand and expand and market it, you still got to stick to your roots. And you got to look at what worked. You know, what were the pinnacle tracks? What were the pinnacle events and areas in the nation in your roots? And I think that if you hold true to those and expand from there, you're going to build a great product that everybody's going to love. But, you know, ultimately, you can't please everybody. So we'll see how the madness transpires, I guess, in the next year and what they decide to do for next year with the schedule.
And then along the lines of schedule, before I almost forgot Josh's Indy 500 thing, I wanted to mention briefly the World Endurance Championship is finally back. The 6 hours of Silverstone are this weekend, and all the noise is coming out of the teams, minus Nissan, who is having to wait a while before they jump in with both feet, is that the cars are going to be a lot quicker this year. Porsche led the way at the first preseason test to Paul Ricard and lapped 2 seconds quicker than the best time a year ago. And they seem to have a healthy margin. They're about 6 tenths ahead of Toyota, with Audi right behind Toyota. So it looks like another close fight there for the World Endurance Championship. But there's lots of talk of track records, not unlike what we're hearing in IndyCar. And even a new outright lap record at Le Mans is on the cards. What is everybody looking forward to in WEC? Do you think Porsche is for real? Can they top Toyota? Can Audi lose 2 years in a row? Something that really is pretty much unfeasible for Audi. And can Nissan come back and sign them all at Le Mans? What do you think, Joey?
First off, I do think Porsche is for real. Everybody just has to remember that last year was the first year of this program. And, you know, it was a lot of collective guys that had never raced with each other before. I mean, you're bringing in Brendan Hartley, who is just a wonderful young talent that came over from the United Sports Car and ran the wheels off the thing. You got Weber, I mean, from F1, and obviously he ran well. I think that you're looking at a program, a second-year development. Do I expect them to win more often? I don't know necessarily about that. I mean, maybe they could put an added win on the table, but I do think that their speed is going to be a lot more competitive, and they're going to be a lot closer to top guys like Toyota and Audi. All things being considered, the biggest thing I'm looking forward to, I'm the biggest Rebellion fanatic when it comes to WEC. I'm happy that they retained Nick Heidfeld and a lot of the cast that they had from last year. I know Fabio Lemer's no longer over there. But overall, I hate the fact that there's so much change, because to me, it was fun to see Rebellion do what they do a few years back. However, with this change in dynamics and different motor philosophies, and I'm very excited to see that they're beginning to not only spearhead their own division with Lotus being in there and potentially others, and essentially being a B class to rival the A class, and I know in some ways be a lot tighter. I'm excited to see that class develop. I'm excited to see the developments that teams like Rebellion, who really have to fine-tune other areas of the car to find speed to even come close to an Audi or a Toyota. Though they will never touch them, there are certain tracks that are tighter that really benefit them. I mean, we saw at COTA how strong they were last year, and I feel like that's one benefit. I'm excited to see this GTLM class. It was very close last year. It's just, I think that the talent level just continues to increase each and every year in WEC, because we keep seeing these GP2 drivers and F1 drivers that fall out of their seats, you know, for financial reasons. For some reason, Marcus Ericsson's in a seat, but yet somebody like Andre Lauder or Louis Duval doesn't get a nod. I don't understand that. But you've got guys that are that talented, and they're in these rides, and it continues to happen each and every year. I mean, we just touched on Ryan Briscoe going over there. Ryan Briscoe was a Penske guy that honestly was in contention for Indy 500 wins. So there's a lot of great talent in WEC, and I'm excited to see this continue to evolve, and hopefully they'll add more, you know, races to the calendar in the coming years, because 8 races, 10 races, too short. They need a 14-race season they don't need to take 3 months off after Le Mans, or two for that matter. I think that 3 weeks is just so.
Could not agree more. And the way you were talking about expanding the season, it makes me think of what we were talking about with IndyCar, if they could bring back some of the old kart venues. And this is no disrespect to IMSA or the Tudor Sports Car Championship, which I love as well. But WEC should really have 24 hours of Daytona and 12 hours of Sebring. Those should be WEC rounds. I would love to see these top LMP1 hybrids come over. Love to see all these big names come and race in the States, not just once when we go down to Dakota and see them in Austin and hang out like we did last year, but three times. That would be an absolutely fantastic show.
You know,
yeah.
last year when we were at COTA, we talked to several drivers, you and me and Chris, and the one thing that we kept hearing, because I was bringing up the schedule point, and then eventually it just became kind of a collective thing, and everybody kept saying Sebring and Monza. And, you know, I think what would be so great, F1 wants to shun Monza so many times here lately, and they want to give so many excuses on why they can't run. One reason... Or one season, Monza's literally going to flip them off and say, you know what, screw you, we don't need you this year, much like we're seeing in Germany. And honestly, I think that's where somebody like WEC could really prove its worth, and I would love to see a WEC season finale for the championship happen in Italy. I think it's a fitting place. I don't think you need to have stuff end in South America or here or there. I think that Italy and Europe, you know, it's a European-based series, even though it's a world event, I think it needs to end in Europe, and I think that, you know, Italy is the perfect spot for it, for Monza.
Especially considering that Ferrari's home track, and they're a big manufacturer in the series, especially in the GT field.
Exactly, and there's always that ever-growing, ever-present rumor that they would like to be an LMP1 manufacturer as well, which if they... get to the top of F1, which they very well may be on the way to doing, we could see that coming back. And Josh, you had a point that banking at Monza is actually being restored right now.
You got a source on that? I'd love to hear.
I just heard it from my boss, but I'm not sure how much it's being restored or if they're just pouring concrete on it to preserve it, but. You know, I mean, obviously it would need a ton of safety upgrades. It would need catch fences, and it would need safer barriers. If they were to run the whole layout, or I think I remember on our factor, there's another layout that before they head back to the final bend of the front stretch, the track actually veers left and then goes into turns three and four of the oval. But obviously, which if they did that, you know, the cars would be very fast heading into turn one. You think that Nissan with 1400 bhp or whatever insane amount that Nissan says that the car can dish out. Imagine the car going flat out all the way from midway down the backstretch, essentially, then all the way into turn one. I mean, that thing would be flying.
That would be magnificent.
Yeah, except then safety comes into hand if the car blows the tire going into one, that thing's going to go. That thing will literally be flying in the air, and we don't want that.
No,
very true. Just kicked in, you know? It would be fantastic to see, especially considering that it would be a massive compromise on setup if, of course, you know, this whole thing was – you know, done to completion, because you have to determine, okay, do you want to set your car up for the chicanes, or you got to slow down a bit, or how are you going to set the car up for the banking? And, of course, it could give Vadim Kogai a bit of a headache. Josh, you know who I'm talking about.
Huh?
That video that we saw. The video that we saw at the hotel with the guy in the Ferrari.
Oh yeah, the Vadim Kogai that couldn't put a wheel right.
She didn't say that.
Milk a cousin.
You get a little bit more money behind him, though. Fortunately, that being said, Joey, I'm behind 100% on them ending the WEC championship in Europe, particularly in Italy, especially considering, you know, how much history Monza has. I mean, Monza actually, I think, held a round or two of the International Le Mans Cup, the precursor to WEC. They used to also race at Imola, if I remember right, which that would be a very interesting track to have a six-hour race at. Although, given that it is a season finale, I'd honestly prefer it to be like a 12-hour race. But then again, who knows?
A race at Imola would be grueling, but I would love to see that. It's a track that has really been neglected ever since F1 canceled the San Marino Grand Prix. Imola remains a Tier 1 track, but no one is really using it. You have some touring cars that go there and some smaller series, but nothing top line like WEC or Formula 1 has touched it in way, way too long. But along those lines, jump into another European-based series that is a world championship that is always in the news, for better or for worse. Formula 1 still reeling after Sebastian Vettel's amazing win over Mercedes in the heat in Malaysia. But they're now going to China, and it's a whole new ballgame. China's a very different track. It's a really interesting turn one, has a banked section, a ridiculously long backstretch, and Mercedes is really working to strike back and show that they are still the team to beat, while simultaneously most fans are hoping that they aren't, and Ferrari is for real and will offer them a challenge. Joey, what are your thoughts?
Mercedes sucks.
That's how you really feel.
I mean, you want to know my thoughts? I think that honestly, China does favor Mercedes, maybe more so than other tracks, especially after we've seen the pace of Ferrari now at a track like Malaysia. Nico Rosberg is always strong there. I know Lewis Hamilton, the diva incognito of the 44 car there. He's going to be strong. I do think that because he's a confidence driver, and given the whiny diva antics that I heard over the radio from Malaysia, I honestly think that his confidence is shaken. And we all know that when Lewis, I mean, anytime he goes and he's got his confidence and it's not there, he does something to throw himself off more. He's mentally just not as strong. And I know he's a championship driver because he's got the championships, woohoo, but at the end of the day, he's not as cerebral as, say, a Sebastian Vettel or even an Alonso. And I say that very lightly because I don't think Alonso is the strongest mentally. But, you know, somebody like Hakimi and Vettel, they really are a race-to-race, where I think somebody like Hamilton really keeps a lot of things, you know, close to the vest and lets it build and continues to have it transition from one race to the next. And it's not until he gets that one run and he feels like he's got that pressure and he breaks through with a pole run or a pole lap that finally it's off. He can go and grab the pole for all I care in China. You know, at the end of the day, I just don't think he's going to have the pace in the race. I look for either a DNF or a third. At the end of the day, I think that it's going to be one of the Ferrari guys taking the win, and probably Nico grabbing second. And if he's not, I look for somebody like a Felipe Massa to sneak up there and grab a good result, because their pace on low downforce tracks is tremendous. And that's exactly what China is. So I very much think that a track like this does favor Mercedes, but at the end of the day, I just don't think that they have the mental toughness to make it happen.
And, you know, speaking of the mental toughness, I was bantering about this thing with my good friend Steve Abel the other day regarding Nico Rosberg. You know, was he psychologically beaten down by having Lewis Hamilton as a teammate? And I just have to wonder to myself, would Nico thrive in a team where he was the de facto number one driver, even if it wasn't a top-tier team? I have to wonder that, because Nico was so strong in the early part of last year, and then it just looked like he's got beaten down by Hamilton. And so, that's just my odd thought there, because there are Formula One has odder team dynamics than any other form of racing. We've seen it between Prost and Senna, between Senna and Andretti, between Lauda and Regazzoni. You know, go back as far as you want. But I just really wonder if Nico jumped out of that spot and became de facto number one driver at, say, Force India or something like that. Would he really thrive there, or would it be just a bad move? And open that up for your comments.
Adam and I have had a chance to talk a little bit about this as far as it relates to Nico Rosberg. And something him and I both saw in Australia, and we saw it again in Malaysia, he really doesn't seem to have that edge that we saw, that rawness from last year. And he really feels like a number two driver, whether it was in the off season or since Spa and the incident that everybody in the world talked about for him bumping into Lewis Hamilton. You know what? Tough crap. It's racing. If you don't like it, don't race. But, he really feels like a de facto number two now. And it really pisses somebody like me off, because you got somebody like Schumacher who is obviously going to be number one at Mercedes, and he's number two. And usually you see a transition to where the number two, as the number one retires or moves on, the number two rises to number one, is with that team, knows the team, knows the technology, knows everything on the ends with that. And so automatically rises to number one, while whoever comes in, no matter who they are, is typically a guy who's learning and he's a step behind. But because Lewis comes with one championship that honestly is complete luck, because Timo Glock decided to slow down 25 seconds on the last lap at Brazil in the rain,
Conspiracy theorist alert.
Yes.
Yes, and aliens built the pyramids.
And... I look at this and I hate it for somebody like Nico, because when he's got that edginess, I know he was cast as the villain after Spa, but to me, all that edginess and all that swagger, that's the attitude you want out of a race driver. And he showed it on the podium, and I know he came off as the bad guy. I really don't care. Sometimes heels are fun to root for. And to me, I think it's something that Lewis needed, because I looked at McLaren and what happened with Alonso, and it's like, congratulations, Lewis. You bitched enough and you got your way. And Alonso's been doing that for years, and I'm seeing Lewis Hamilton do the same thing. And maybe it's evolution from one driver to the next on becoming diva. I think that somebody like Kimi Raikkonen would flat out piss Lewis Hamilton off, because he'd just be like, I don't care if you don't like me, or if you don't, I'm going to beat your ass. And that's just
good Kimi impression.
That's just what's going to end up happening. And I think, to answer your question, a team of Nico and Eco would be fun at Force India, because we know Hülkenberg's stuck there for the rest of his life. And, will he thrive? Probably not. He'd probably do as well as he did at Williams when they had Weber and him together. I think it was Weber. He'd be a guy that's in the perennial top six, but I think that part of his move is with the technology, and it kind of fell into place because of Lauda and Toto Wolff leading that team. But I think also part of the reason that he's being kicked around is because of the same reasons that team is on top, because of Toto and Lauda. And to me, it doesn't even feel like Toto Wolff runs that team. It feels like Lauda runs it. And, Toto just kind of takes orders and acts like Arnold Schwarzenegger, big dog in charge. But those are my thoughts. Chris, you got any thoughts on that?
Well, Nico team will be better, but, on the line a minute. He's not racing against me in the same car, the car will be very quick with them behind the wheel. That's my Kimi impression, unfortunately. And I'm not as good as James Hinchcliffe behind the microphone. And on Nico team, think of the marketing for that. I mean, the merchandise sells itself. I mean, you can just put a Nico with a little 2 on top, or Nico squared. You can put both drivers' numbers on the hat. You say, who are you for? I'm for Nico. And, like I said, the commercial marketing aspect writes itself. That could become a very popular team, especially in Germany. All you need is David Hasselhoff, and you have the perfect trinity for and Mercedes engines, you have the perfect trinity for an all-German team. Adam?
As much as Germans might like it and Nico Hülkenberg might like it to be with Mercedes, I think it's more likely to see Nico Rosberg take a step back to Force India than the poor Nico Hülkenberg finally get the break he's been waiting for and people have been calling for years now. Because echoing Frank and Joey, I don't know what's going on with Nico Rosberg. You go back, I rewatched the Brazilian Grand Prix from last year, which was really Nico's last stand in the hope for the championship. And he led all the practice sessions, all the qualifying sessions, won the race. And at a certain point before the race, I think it was immediately after qualifying, he was talking to the media. And they told him that Lewis was nervous. And Nico said, good, I want him to be. I want him to be nervous. I want him to know I'm going to be there. And now, after both of these races, Nico's come out on the podium and in the press conference both saying, you know, oh, I just didn't have it today, or I didn't quite get the setup, I wasn't completely comfortable, or Lewis did better, or Sebastian did better. And that doesn't sound like the same person to me. He's been completely, in my mind, cast as the number two in that team, purposely. They should have let the season shake itself out a little bit, but ever since Hamilton came back to the fore at the end of last season, and Nico couldn't get it done in the final race, I don't know if it's Niki Lauda, I don't know if it's Toto Wolff, but it's almost like they set him down behind the scenes and said, all right, Nico, we're sorry, you're a great guy. We know you've been with the team since 2010 and everything, but we're going to put all our apples in Lewis's cart right now. And it's a real shame because Nico's won 8 races for him, and they're going to one of his strongest tracks. I just hope he's mentally in the game to give it his best at China. I don't want to say it's his last shot because it's a long, long season, but he really needs to show something this weekend, or he is definitely on the verge of being left behind. Joey, you have another thought on that?
Just one small thought. If this team begins to start taking a backseat to the likes of Ferrari and maybe even Williams through the evolution of the season, and if Red Bull Racing finds their groove, or even if Toro Rosso suddenly takes control and becomes the lead Red Bull camp, much like in Alonso, I could see Lewis Hamilton throwing a fit no matter what contract he signed because they're written on paper. They really honestly hold no weight. I could see Lewis be the guy that's like, okay, screw you guys. I'm going somewhere else where I know I can win another championship, and he'll bounce when Nico's the guy that's been committed to him the whole time. And it's unfortunate for a guy like that. And, you know, to echo Chris's thoughts, he's a German on a German team running really well. What more do you want? Because, unfortunately, now he just sounds like a contend driver with his place in the sport.
Yeah, he sounds very much like a content driver. He doesn't want to upset the apple cart, to use a second apple reference. But it's really interesting to see. I do think Ferrari is going to be up there. I think Kimi is definitely due a good race. I know that'll make you happy, Joey. And even though Williams seems to definitely be best of the rest behind Ferrari and Mercedes with their straight line speed, I would not be surprised to see Bottas maybe get onto the podium. He needs a good race. He really hasn't been anywhere yet. Or even Massa, which a lot of people don't realize right now. If you look at the championship, it is Hamilton, Vettel, Rosberg, Massa. Felipe Massa in a Williams is fourth place in the world championship right now, which I think is astounding and absolutely wonderful. But enough F1 talk aside, everybody will be eyes glued to China come 1 a.m. our time, Sunday morning. But we've got a lot going on in the world of NASCAR. They are coming to Texas Motor Speedway this weekend for the Truck Commander 500. Joey and I had the privilege of being at the TMS Media Day, talking with Eddie Gossage and Will Power and some other folks down at a fancy little luncheon at the House of Blues in Dallas. And they are ready to put on a great show at Texas. What are you looking for when you're there at the track this weekend, Joey?
Hopefully fisticuffs between Gordon and Keselowski again, because that was a lot of fun to be kind of in the middle. Honestly, what I'm looking forward to seeing is, you know, the race is going to be run under the lights. It's intense. I'm interested to see if these underdogs that have been sitting and floating around the top 12, top 15 of the point standings, your Martin Truex Juniors, your A.J. Allmendingers, your Casey Mears, single car outfits that in some cases have affiliations by motor or chassis with a top tier team, but still a single car outfit nonetheless. If they can sustain, you know, this track is very fast, and I look for somebody like Truex to maybe hold true to his top 10. He tied the biggest streak of his career, longest streak of his career with top 10 finishes. Now I think he's at 8 straight top 10 finishes, and I know that 8 seems to be the tricky number when you look at Harvick and the top 2 finishes he had. I very much look for that 14 to rebound and really show the pace. They showed it last year early. They ended up sitting 3rd and drove towards the front in the early laps, but ended up the engine blew by lap 5, so very early laps. I'm interested to see Tony Stewart try to bounce back. He's usually pretty decent here. Hopefully Roush Fenway Racing can get their blue ovals to actually do something besides sit in the back and, you know, hold true to some pace instead of being outrun by Front Row Motorsports. And I guess lastly, everybody's waiting for Carl Edwards to finally get that first win with Joe Gibbs Racing, because he's been running with this Toyota team now. He's got a handful of races under. Mile and a half cookie cutters are his bread and butter. And just wondering if this is the race that we finally see him break through. And even if he doesn't get a win, ends up finishing in the top 3 and leads some laps and is competitive. You know, we saw Toyota win at Martinsville 2 weeks ago with Joe Gibbs Racing, Denny Hamlin taking the checkered. You know, are they back? Is this something that they're building towards to really bring back this whole team, because they've been down for roughly a year now? And, you know, with that, how does David Ragan fit into everything? Because, you know, Kyle Busch comes back, but David Ragan has a win. Joe Gibbs Racing may or may not continue to run him, but if you have a talent like Kyle Busch, obviously you run Kyle. But given the amount of season that Kyle's going to miss, even if he wins races, it's not going to be in the chase. Could you imagine a David Ragan win, whether here or another track he's strong at, Talladega, where he has a win, going back to Front Row Motorsports and putting a front row car in the chase come championship time at the end of the season? I mean, it's just, this is silly season at its finest, and this is honestly just absolute chaos when it comes to what's transpired this NASCAR season. You know, Kurt Busch is strong, Kevin Harvick's strong, Keselowski's come back to a solid start this year, much like last year. Can he keep it? I mean, there's a lot of storylines heading into this weekend at TMS.
Lots of silence. That's what everybody likes.
Well,
you know what?
I'm
going to throw some out since we're silent. I think the Penske team is continuing to improve and get better and better in NASCAR. My pick for Texas, Joey Logano. He won his race last year. There's a good reason they call this kid sliced bread, and he's my pick. He really is. I think Joey's going to win.
You know, talking to him at Media Day, and I'm actually really excited. I get a one-on-one interview with him Friday morning, and I'll tell y'all more about that next week. But the thing that's so tricky is something he touched on Media Day. He's like, man, we first unloaded here, I was crap as a driver. Like, I'd sit there and I'd be running, and I think I'm real fast, but I'm still running 30th. And, like, I didn't really know what was going wrong, because everywhere else I was fast, but for some reason here I wasn't. And he says it wasn't until, I think it was in the last year at Gibbs, where something really clicked and he was able to bring it over from Penske. So, you know, It's really interesting when you hear something like that, because he notoriously hasn't run well here. I think he's got 2 top 10 finishes and that win from last year. But outside of that, he hasn't really been anywhere. But to echo your thoughts, I think all his top 10 finishes are with Penske. So, I mean, they are definitely – Roush used to dominate this place, and Penske's really been strong here, just like Hendrick is strong everywhere. So, really, I can't say that's a bad pick by any stretch.
I'll go a bit of the opposite route, and my pick is going to cater to Eddie Gossage's fascination with propping up everything. He's got a billboard around town that says Gordon's Last Stand, and talking to Eddie at the media day, he went over and talked to Jeff Gordon after the fight at the end of last season at TMS, and Jeff Gordon said, of any place, it had to be here. Because he knew Eddie was going to use it for publicity, because that's what Eddie is best at. And I think Jeff Gordon really wants some redemption. I think he really could have won the championship last year if it weren't for that. And so he is my pick to win. As you said, Hendrick cars are strong everywhere. I think Sliced Thread will do good. I was really impressed meeting him at the media day. He seems to have his head on his shoulders, and as Eddie Gossage was saying, he could be the next Jeff Gordon kind of superstar. But I'll go one with the old dogs and say Jeff Gordon is going to win at TMS this weekend.
I tell you what, Jeff Gordon really needed this bye week, didn't he? I mean, the start of the season he's had, I mean, it's just been rough. I mean, it's his last season, and you figure he'll have some good runs. And, I mean, currently he's just – the first few races have been absolutely rough. I mean, he picked up the top 10 at Martinsville, but outside of that, I mean, his season has just absolutely sucked. And I think if it was – he spent his off week, so, you know, hanging out with President Obama and brought his family to the White House and doing stuff like that, but trying to get away maybe is the best therapy to get back in and do something. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see. Gordon for a long time couldn't win here, and honestly, before the safer barriers, since safer barriers has been a hot topic, there was a hit that he took coming out of four several years back, back when Dale Jr. was winning here and whatnot. And, I mean, he ended up blowing the right front tire, and he hit the wall a ton, knocked down the wall practically, and knocked the air out of him, kind of messed up his shoulder a little bit. And, honestly, ever since that hit, he hasn't quite had that same fire. He didn't have that same fire for a long time. And, whether it's a hit knocking him out of the way, because I think that was the same year he took the hit at Vegas, where down the backstretch, car yanks coming out of two, and he just hit that wall head on where there's not a safer barrier. I mean, Jeff Gordon has got terrible luck of finding bare walls. So, you know, and it's not until recently we've seen this fire back, and I hate to see him go. I've never been the biggest Jeff Gordon supporter, but, you know, I always saw the politically correct, you know, poster boy, boring after the race. Oh, I want to thank God, and I want to thank my sponsors. All those things are good, and you need to do that. But there was just no fire, no passion, it felt like. And it's not until this past few years where I've seen him get in fights with Keselowski, run his mouth a little bit. That's the Jeff Gordon I've been wanting to see, and I think that's the public is finally starting to really fall in love with Jeff Gordon a little bit more because he's showing more of that brash personality that honestly is what NASCAR is all about.
Well, since, you know, we are talking about God and all, I have to pick Redneck Jesus to win. That's right. I'm picking Dale Earnhardt Jr. to win at Texas.
Junior!
That
would be a very popular pick for sure.
Speaking of people that are going to get hammered when Junior wins, I do at least want to go off on a very small tangent to kind of make us all have a little bit of a small chuckle. But there was a sheriff's deputies in Mobile County, Alabama, that actually got some liquor for some underage LSU students. Over 1,800 cans of beer. Now, of course, it was all Natty Light, so it really wasn't true beer. But, you know, your school may party, but my school parties harder. So take that for what you will. We know how to do it down here.
Yeah, Southern pride at its best.
that's more that terrifying
they weren't
going to
remember doing
that
anyway.
Barrier.
No way, not at all. Especially with the activities they were going to get down to, they needed a lot of safer barriers. Anyway, so now that we've got NASCAR, I guess, predicted, let's see. There was one more little racing thing I did want to at least touch on a little bit here. We do have our other favorites, I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this. We do have, I think Tudor isn't racing this weekend, if memory serves me right. Their next race is at Long Beach with the prototypes and the GT Le Mans cars, if memory serves me right. Do we have any predictions for that race heading coming up? Because, you know, we're not going to worry about having GT Daytona or the prototype challenge cars there. Are we going to try and predict that round of the championship?
Well,
I'll
I mean,
throw a prediction in there. Go ahead, Josh.
Go ahead, Adam. I didn't mean to talk over you.
You know, twice in a row now we've seen Daytona prototype-based cars dominate. Despite both times, despite Daytona and despite Sebring, pole being set by a P2-based car. Both times, one of the Ligier JSP2 cars. So I really think this might be their time to strike back. The big advantage the DP-based cars is top speed, more proven technology. They're better known to the teams that are running them. The P2-based cars, they're more nimble. They're lighter. I really, really think it's going to be time for Mike Shank or somebody like that to step up with one of these Ligiers and certainly be on pole at Long Beach. And for me, probably take the win. What do you think, Chris?
Well, P2 cars, you know, we thought we had the advantage at Sebring. Not so much. Honestly, a lot is going to depend on strategy. To be truthful with you, it's going to depend a lot on strategy, not overall and raw pace. Because if that were the case, then Michael Shanks and Tracy Krohn's cars would have won at Sebring since the Ligiers were so powerful. But of course, Michael Shanks' cars found the wall very early in the race, and, well, nearly happened with a Krohn car. Josh?
Yeah, well, in last year's race, keep in mind, it was led wire-to-wire by Scott Pruitt and Memo Rojas. I mean, Long Beach is a tough place to pass in IndyCar, and it's even tougher in a sports car. So, I mean, I'm thinking it's just, you know, whoever gets the pole is going to win the race. But I'm thinking if I had to bet money, I would say that Jordan and Ricky Taylor probably are a good shot. I mean, at the end of the race at Sebring a couple weeks ago, you know, they were on it, and had they not had the problem earlier, they probably would have won the race. So, if I had to put money, I'd put it on the Taylor boys.
Joey, you got any thoughts for Tudor cars at Long Beach?
Well, you know, I picked Ligier in Daytona. I picked Ligier at Sebring. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So I'm not going Ligier again because obviously they don't have the sustainability or the common sense to stay off of all their other cars for an entire race. So I'm gonna go ahead and go Action Express. I mean, I understand that the Taylor boys were pretty strong and whatnot, I'm not gonna say they would have won the race. I think they would have challenged Action Express. You know, I love the lineup. It's a great lineup at Action Express. The team has always been just consistently good, and I think that good is enough to take another win and follow up with what they did and keep a momentum run rolling. I think that the race is so close to Sebring that really comes into play with development and momentum and everything else. I really think Action Express is going to be able to hold it down. I do expect Scott Pruitt to be a factor. I think that Chip Ganassi Racing car is going to be strong, but, I mean, as it is every year, at the end of the day, I mean, that's what I think. I think maybe they're battling, but, you know, side note, how crazy is it that we keep talking about Scott Pruitt as, you know, a Grand Am / United sports car driver when he wasn't a bad guy in kart? And honestly, he was a guy I rooted against back whenever I was a kid, just being an Andretti fan growing up. And, you know, for me, I remember more of the kart days. And here he is, and he's been kicking ass in Tudor and Grand Am for years. And ultimately, when he finally puts up the helmet, which is probably going to be relatively soon in the coming seasons, how crazy is it that it's going to be him looking back at his career? We're going to be talking about what he's done in the sports car more than what he's done in open wheel.
Yeah, well, he was. I mean, honestly, I think Pruitt in a way was another victim of the split of, you know, he was. I mean, he was kind of peaking a little bit as a driver in 1995. I mean, he would. I mean, you know, he damn near won the Indy 500, and he beat, he beat Little Al for the win at the Michigan 500. No easy, no easy task. But then you know he stayed put with Cart and won one additional race and then you know he left Pat Patrick's powerhouse to go to Cal Wells and then he kind of trickled down to that crappy 32 tied car in Winston Cup and then from there his, and I don't want to say his professional career, he kind of has fallen off, because sports car racing to us, it's professional. It's not, I mean, sure, it's not NASCAR. It's not kart, but you know, I guess I kind of lost my train of thought there, but you know, had he have not gone to Cal Wells team, you know, I mean, you know, had he stayed with Pat Patrick, I think his career in IndyCar may have zigged instead of zagged.
You know, I think there's a little bit of Jeff Gordon syndrome going on there, because when he was in an open wheel car and he was starting to find that potential, you had guys like Alex Zanardi that busted on the sport. Now, obviously, Andretti was strong. And, I mean, Jimmy Vassar, I mean, he was a champion in kart just before Zanardi took over with his two, and then Ganassi went on to the three straight. I mean, great, good driver, could sit there and get podiums and get top fives, but just for some reason, he just was in a generation when the talent was honestly just better. And, I mean, it's like when Jeff Gordon brought in Jimmy Johnson. And honestly, if he doesn't do that, Jeff Gordon might have seven titles instead. So, you know, it's just – I think he's a victim of that component. At the end of the day, if you're the epic great driver, you're going to overcome all those. But I just think it's funny looking back, as good of a driver as he was in open wheel, that what he's accomplished in sports car. And I think ultimately that's the fate. I honestly for a while thought that would be where Dario Franchitti would go permanently, up until obviously his accident at Houston and the retirement that led following, unfortunately. I look for a lot of these IndyCar stars to move over, maybe a Ryan Hunter-Reay when he hangs up the helmet, you know, moving over and transitioning to sports cars for at least 3 to 5 seasons and just making it a fun hobby to continue to race. And then those teams will definitely take them, because there's so much contrast between the two as far as teams go. You know, like 8-Star being incorporated in Indy Lights, I think that they're only going to continue to progress, and there's great crossover between those. So, that's my thought as it relates to Tudor and, I guess, upcoming in Long Beach.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, getting those open wheel names into that series, and particularly when they run Daytona, they have the current stars of the series in there that they, you know, come on and win the race, you know, like Bourdais and Dixon. But at the same time, it's a great stopping ground for fantastic drivers who just haven't found a right in their career. And, you know, Scott Pruitt, you know, I love the guy to death. I've met him, talked to him a bunch of times, but he's probably done more in sports cars than he ever would have done in open wheel, because he just didn't have the right deal at the right time. So, you know, fantastic career. Scott Pruitt should have nothing to look back in anger about when he decides to hang up his helmet one day.
Could not agree more on Scott Pruitt. And along those lines, we've got a couple minutes left, so I want to get everybody's closing thoughts, what they are most impressed with or what they're thinking about, and what they're looking forward to with a very full weekend of racing ahead. Chris, why don't you kick us off?
Well, I tell you what, I am, of course, looking forward to this weekend. It's going to be a fantastic weekend over at Nolan Motorsports Park, in my opinion, provided the rain either holds off or moves through very quickly. I'm going to be hoping for the best, but expecting the worst from the rain, especially since Matt Weaver won't be here until probably Sunday. I did happen to see on Facebook a little bit earlier that Steve Burns from NASCAR Media, he's not doing very well in his fight against cancer, so I'm definitely going to send out a Forza Steve to him. Best wishes to him, and also best wishes to AJ Foyt, because he's lost a lot of weight recently. He had, you know, some operations over the winter time, and he just recently hit 80 years old, which I'm sure he probably didn't think he was going to do way back when he started. So he's let's have some good years coming out of him for a long time to come. Josh or Joey or Frank, one of y'all take it.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on the Forza Steve. You know, cancer just plain sucks, and you know, there's no other way to put that. But looking forward to Nola this weekend. I mean, you know, hopefully it's not extreme downpour, but I mean, if it's enough to make the racing interesting, I'm all for it.
And I'll tell you what, but my thoughts on Nola are, I believe that the organizers of this event have put everything they can into making this a great event, and they are not optimistic about making money. They realize they're not going to make money for the first couple of years, but they have entrenched themselves into realizing that this is a long-term endeavor. To make this a fantastic event that will be on the IndyCar calendar for years and years to come. I was talking to Chris Negron, and she told me, she says, we want to one day become the Indy South and have this fantastic venue for IndyCar race for years and years to come. And I think that's very refreshing that they don't want to make money right off the bat. They want to build this event and build it and make it bigger and bigger. And I just wish them the best. And I hate the fact that thunderstorms are moving in through the weekend, and I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that those thunderstorms part the ways and throw the sun on Nola for the weekend.
I see some symmetry between how TMS began with the first weekend here in 97, there were storms in qualifying and practice, really bad storms with hail and tornadoes around the area. And, you know, I was just a kid, and I think I was a sophomore in high school, and that stuff happened. And, you know, actually, no, 97, I was definitely not a sophomore in high school. I was in middle school.
No, you were a kid.
So, you know, sorry, I'm going back to whenever I skipped school to go to the racetrack on Monday whenever they ended up raining out on Sunday and stuff that I got grounded for as a kid. But, you know, there's some symmetry with how it's starting. If it does rain, hopefully there's not a 13-car wreck in the first corner. But, you know, there's some symmetry there. It was always tough at first for Eddie Gossage and TMS to find some traction, and there wasn't really a whole lot around the area except pasture and, you know, a hotel across the street pretty much that was in the middle of getting built. And there's not much around Nola. And, you know, it's the old steeple of if you build it, they will come. And I think that if it continues to put on a great show, I would love to see it start earlier in the season, maybe closer to Mardi Gras, and really promote it with a very festive, unique, similar to a Milwaukee Indy Fest kind of thing. I think that has the ability to help them. But, you know, we'll see. It should be fun. Marco seems to do really well. Marco Andretti seems to do really well on events that don't matter right away, like Sonoma and Iowa. So, no offense, Chris, but this event doesn't matter right away just yet. It could become a one-off if it really sucks. And, I mean, you know, I may be surprised with him winning there. But looking forward to this weekend at TMS. It's going to be a lot of fun. And there's a lot going on for, you know, us, Tribute Racing as a whole. We're gearing up to launch a brand new website. I've been going to work during the day and working on it the second I get off work, all the way through the night, getting 2 or 3 hours of sleep here and there. And, you know, Adam's been helping me with a lot of different things. And shout out to our web developer, Anna Gouldy. She's been absolutely phenomenal. And Bite Size Media, if you get a chance, look at her stuff. Definitely going to recommend her. Hopefully we'll be able to release this on Thursday night or Friday morning, which is just in time for a Texas company to unveil and unleash everything during a TMS weekend, NASCAR weekend, and unleash hell on the media world, so to speak. So those are my thoughts. Keep fighting, Michael. Forza Jules. Thoughts are with Steve Burns as well. And, yeah, I'm just super excited to get this weekend rolling.
Yes, I'll echo pretty much everybody's thoughts. Super, super excited for this weekend. One, for the new website we've got that will be coming out in time for the weekend. Two, that everyone is finally racing. We have NASCAR, we have Formula One, we have IndyCar, we have WEC. Everything is finally going full bore. And one final thought, that's an announcement that I just saw. Robert De Niro is going to play Enzo Ferrari in a new biopic movie. It's being produced in Italy. It's going to be called Ferrari, and it is going to be a film that starts in the 40s and ranges all the way to the 80s. So the prime of Enzo Ferrari's career and the founding of the company, all the way to his death, I assume. So keep an eye out for that one. De Niro said that it is going to start production very soon. Clint Eastwood has been approached to direct. He said he wants to see the script first. There are some other names attached. But it's being produced in Italy. They will definitely do it justice with De Niro playing him. So I am beyond excited about that. That should be absolutely amazing.
I wonder if they're going to contact Piero Ferrari about this and get how much input they're going to see from him.
I'm sure they probably already have. If Robert De Niro's in it and it's being produced in Italy, I bet they're going to have probably unprecedented access, I would hope.
But one more thing, if I
go ahead, Chris.
If I may, one more thing. With the new Indy Lights car, I was just thinking about the Indy Lights races that they had over at St. Petersburg, and with how Carlin secured the front row of the grid in both races, despite having never raced an Indy Lights car before, it's got me thinking. You know, if Carlin can do so well in an Indy Lights field where they've never raced before, I wonder how many other European teams are going to look at Indy Lights racing, possibly IndyCar in the next few years to race in, since, you know, the dollar, racing is, you know, for the most part, probably cheaper over here than it is in Europe. And you can, you know, develop drivers very quickly. Just a random thought, you know?
Joey really hit it on the head when he was talking about WEC earlier and saying how the field in WEC is getting stronger because so many guys are leaving Formula One, so many guys are leaving GT2. And I think it's the same kind of thing we could see benefiting Indy Lights and IndyCar. I mean, you've got Max Chilton, arguably not the best Formula One driver in the world, but he was a Formula One driver, and now he is an Indy Lights trying to get into IndyCar. It's a topsy-turvy world we got right now. So the success of Carlin, I think, only bodes well, and I think we'll see more teams expand into Indy Lights and IndyCar if we keep our fingers crossed. But that's all the time we got for tonight, folks. I'm Adam Tate of Tribute Racing on behalf of Joey Barnes of Tribute Racing, Christopher DeHardy of Motorsport.com, Barmer of Motorsport Monday, and Mr. Frank Santoroski of Drafting the Circuits. We thank you for listening and jumping in the gravel trap with us. Join us next week. Have a good night, everybody.